From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Before Toots Thielemans, the humble harmonica was the pocket cargo of children, convicts, and cowboys. But ever since the Belgian-born musician landed on American soil 55 years ago, he's almost single-handedly made the chromatic harmonica a force in the world of jazz. Toots Thielemans has shared the stage with almost every jazz great of the last half century, from Charlie Parker to George Shearing and Jaco Pastorius. But you don't have to be a jazz fan to have heard the sound of Toots. His music has graced the movie soundtrack of Midnight Cowboy. Quincy Jones, Paul Simon, and Billy Joel have all put the Toots sound to work. And almost every child under 40 knows his jaunty opening theme to Sesame Street. Toots Thielemans has been the perennial winner of Downbeat Magazine's poll for Best Miscellaneous Instrument Performer. But the late jazz trumpeter Clifford Brown once said the way Toots plays the harmonica, they shouldn't call it a miscellaneous instrument. Quincy Jones says of his music, he goes for the heart and makes you cry. Thielemans is performing with the pianist Kenny Werner tonight and tomorrow night at Scholars Jazz Club in Cambridge, Massachusetts, if you're in the area. We talked with him this afternoon. Welcome, Toots Thielemans.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure being here.
It's so great to have you in the studio. Here you are, you're turning 80 this year, you're putting out CDs, you're performing. Do you never stop?
Oh, boy. This is a little bit of a promotion for our new project with Kenny Werner. We were already in Cleveland, in Albany, and St. Paul, and now here.
You're all over. You're making it happen.
Next week, Los Angeles, and then back to Belgium, sleep one night, and go to South Africa.
I hope.
Other than that, the business is bad.
I mean, Well, it's great that you've still got them coming in at your age. You know, Toots, I was looking back over the music you've performed, and I have to admit that I had not had you on my CD shelf, but I realized when I saw these performances that you are almost the soundtrack of a big part of my life and that of many other Americans. You showed up in so many places with your harmonica, with your whistling, setting the tone, the mood, the background. It's incredible how much. I look back, and there you are in the score from Midnight Cowboy.
Yes.
There you are at the beginning of Sesame Street, the harmonica in Sesame Street.
The first show, yeah.
And there you are, of course, with your famous bluesette, which we'll hear a little later, but it's a song that everybody knows, and then
it was a hit, but became a standard.
Absolutely a standard, and we'll listen to that a little bit later. How did you go from being a young man in wartime Belgium to a young man in love with this music in the very heart of American music, sort of making the soundtrack for America?
Well, to put it very simply, this is the communication power and the contaminating power of a thing called the blue note. The African-American message, you know. I am so indebted and I'm totally... My first contamination is when I heard Louis Armstrong. That was during occupied Belgium in those days, 42.
And so you were a teenager.
Well, I was 20 years old.
Okay,
already,
20 by then.
And trying to become a mathematics teacher.
Now, is this when the war ended?
And no, the war ended... 45.
How did you hear Louis Armstrong then in the 40s during the war?
No, there were records. We had all the recordings, access to all the jazz recordings until 1940, because no American records could come in to Belgium occupied Belgium. And we could listen very carefully. It's played soft volume to the British radio.
So this is after the German troops came into Brussels, and you would listen, I suppose, at night very softly
to
the BBC.
Or buy records. There were still records. And
there
was Louis Armstrong with the Mills Brothers.
Right.
Four spirituals. Carry me back, you know, that sort of thing. And beautiful Louis. And he still is my number one guru.
Yeah. There you were, 20 years old, listening to Louis Armstrong. The war was raging. You were in Belgium. You had not really gotten into the harmonica so much yet. You were looking to be a guitarist, weren't you?
No. I started as a kid. My folks had a sidewalk cafe. And was 3-4 years old, I played the accordion a little.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I played the songs for my parents, what I heard. And those old.
Let's hear it.
I played on the harmonica instead of the accordion.
Yeah.
And those songs like that. And
there's a sidewalk cafe
in
Belgium.
Brussels, in a very popular neighborhood, like our Lower East Side in Brussels,
Right. You put us right
and
there.
And that was a sensation, I hear. The traffic, there was electric, the tramways, railway.
Yep.
And they had the, you know, when little Jean, that's my name, Jean-Baptiste Tielemans, and when I played, there was the traffic had to stop.
How did Jean-Baptiste become Toots?
That's, again, the power of the above-mentioned African-American. And also in these days, when I became good, I mean, at the professional level to play, you know, in Belgium, in a jazz band or in a dance show type thing. There was a little group called Le Jazz Hot, of course.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hot jazz. And their guitar player ran away with the boss's wife, so they needed another guitar player. And I was already getting the word was out, the grapevine had it, that there's this little kid, this new guy, you know, he don't look so smart, but he can play.
He can make it happen.
Yes, that was the saying. And he shows up on time. Right away I had the punctuality reputation. And they said, I went to audition. And what's your name? Jean Tielemans. That's a typical French name. Yeah. Flemish, Tielemans is Flemish, and Jean is, that don't make it.
You don't it's play just not going
to
work.
On the poster, Jean Tielemans, to play jazz, and you play. In those days, I was already up to date in 46 on Charlie Parker, partly, and especially on the guitarist with Nat King Cole Trio, Oscar Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I followed that.
But Toots, where did that one come from?
And then, the drummer said, see, again, we read already, that was after the war then, we read Esquire magazine, we had the jazz magazines.
Right.
Here, you know, and we knew who played third trumpet with Tommy Dorsey, and the first saxophone with Benny Goodman was Toots Mondello. And there was a trumpet player who wrote also music for Billie Holiday, Toots Camarata.
And it sounded good to you.
Not to me.
Yeah,
I had nothing to do. The drummer said, hey, on va t'appeler Toots. We will call you Toots. And it got on the poster and still is.
And before you know it, you had made your way to the United States, and you had brought along with you your harmonica, and you had taken that harmonica and begun to assert how this very humble instrument with so much folk legacy behind it could work its way into the heart of jazz. I want to jump right into a 1953 recording of Body and Soul.
Oh, that was with George Shearing. Yes, that was done in Los Angeles. And that number, that standard, that great melody, Johnny Green. I was fast in those days.
Let's hear just how fast. It's Toots Thielemans, Body and Soul, 1953. The harmonica comes to jazz. Thank you. Toots Thielemans, who's with us in the studio, listening back and just laughing
later.
And saying 50 years ago, looking at
the speed.
I was
done in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and wow, did you work
with George Shearing Quintet. It was where I played mostly the guitar. I kept the low register melody note on the guitar. And once in a while I played
the harmonica.
Wait, play a few more seconds when the break when we go fast.
Let's hear.
Pretty soon. 5 seconds. Now.
Okay. That's 50 years later, and it's still got him going. That is just fantastic. What did the gang think when you pulled out the harmonica? Were they ready to see the harmonica in American jazz?
May I tell an anecdote?
Please.
In 1947, I came to the States with my uncle Theophile, the brother of my father. Mm. Listen to this. I can't play that fast anymore.
Just can't stop listening to 1953.
You put up a good one.
Is right, yeah.
And we were in Miami.
Yeah.
And there was the air of Straighten Up and Nat King Cole, you know, in every...
Fly Right.
In every Straighten Up and Fly Right, Route 66 and all that. Mona Lisa. And I had my harmonica in my pocket, and in every restaurant there was a trio.
Yeah.
Most are piano, bass, and guitar, and somebody sang. And I finally got up the nerve to buy a drink to the musician. Say, well, I'm from Belgium, I play the harmonica, can I play? And then I was allowed to sit in Miami.
Thank God you had the courage.
The nerve, of course.
Yeah.
And in that restaurant, there was the very famous, legendary, not then already, but now, Bill Gottlieb.
Mm.
Very famous jazz photographer.
Mm-hmm.
He has shots of Ella Fitzgerald, you know, those very...
All the greats.
And what are you doing? Well, I'm here for a few days. And when you come to New York, okay, call me. I'll take you to the street. Still, that was the 52nd Street was still almost on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was into talk about how did the harmonica get. And in one of the clubs, the Three Deuces, the Howard McGhee All-Stars were Hank Jones, Percy Heath, Milt Jackson, all my people I knew from the records.
And
from
they
Belgium.
Were in Manhattan, yeah.
And Bill goes up to Hank Jones.
Uh-huh.
He's still alive, Hank, I remember. And I got this guy from Belgium, plays the harmonica, and the whole band, boo.
Yeah.
Belgium, what's Belgium? You know, what is that? And harmonica. And yes, what do you want to play? And I knew I was up to date.
Yeah.
And then in those days, one of the exam pieces, only two bars I will play it, was the third and the fourth bar of I Can't Get Started. So I played a chromatic sequence.
Let's hear.
And then you have to show yourself now.
So let's just keep it going.
You know, and then the
and there
band,
you were off. How did they react?
Yeah, they said, wow. You know, and then a career is born. Yeah, I sat in the piano with Lenny Tristano Trio, and that's how I broke the ice.
And there you've got it all, how a young man makes his way in, brings an instrument that wasn't part of the scene, makes it part of the scene. Toots Thielemans, it's great talking with you. Play us out into this break. Give us a little more on that harmonica of yours.
Okay, I finished that.
Just jump right in. Talking with jazz harmonica player extraordinaire Toots Thielemans. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with the great jazz harmonica player and whistler Toots Thielemans. His music is everywhere. It's music you don't even know you know. Here from 1963, Bluesette by Toots Thielemans.
Bluesette.
Steelmans, you've said that Bluzet was your pension plan, 1963.
Well, my social security number.
Right. It's the standard.
It's a combination. It's a calling card, a carte de visite in French, they call it, because it's got the blues and it's got my childhood music, the Musette. Blues plus Musette is Bluzet.
How did you decide to whistle, to make the whistle be the instrument here?
I play the guitar, if you notice, and I put the whistle an octave higher. When we were with Shearing, you know, on those long trips, I kept whistling. And the bass player, Al McKibben, he lives in Las Vegas now, I understand. And he said, "Man, you whistle better than you play." And then that was the beginning of stereo, you know?
Sure.
And I was in the studio with Phil Ramone, who is now the celebrated producer of the Frank Sinatra recordings.
Right.
And all that. We're still friends. But I said, "Phil, can you put a mic in front of my mouth? I'm going to whistle." And that's the way it happened. You know, you hear the guitar on one side and the whistle on the other side. And this is here, Bluzet version with the Quincy Jones production.
And, you know, we can hear, even here, you describe how you started with the accordion, you got under the harmonica. Even in this song, there's still that kind of funny combination of cheeriness and melancholy that you hear in that old European accordion. And here it is even in your whistle in American jazz.
You know, this... in New York, and I got a call for an interview. "Where does the real Toots Steelmans feel at home?" And without thinking too much, I said, between a smile and a tear. And that song, all I do is not far from the smile, not far from the tear. In painting, it's a pastel color. Pastel is a mixture of two. It's not blue, it's not yellow. It's the two of them, or red and black, or whatever blue, red. No, what am I saying? Black and white give gray, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Gray is smile and tear.
There you are, between a smile and a tear. What is that? Is that your European childhood?
Is it the 50s?
It fit the time so perfectly. You know that from the way Bluzet was received and played millions of times.
Well, it built up slowly, slowly. It never was a hit. I went to show it to the publisher, Lou Levy. Years ago, he used to be married to one of the Andrews sisters. I'm talking about 1962. Mm-hmm. I said, "Lou, I think I have a song for you," and I put it in the publisher's office, you know.
Yeah.
And he reacted, "That's going to be a standard. It'll never be a hit, but it will put all your kids through college." Typical Jewish expression, you know.
He called it pretty
your son will be a doctor with that song, you know, or something like that.
Right, that's great. And you said this is with Quincy Jones. How did you come to know Quincy Jones?
Oh, that's Frank Rosolino playing the trombone.
On the trombone, right.
He died. He was a very funny man, but he killed himself. He suicide. And Quincy I was already in New York, part of the scene, so to speak, in the early 50s. And then, 53, 54, there started to get a lot of talk about this young cat from Seattle that writes great arrangements. And it was Quincy, and we became friends. We met. In fact, he brought me to Hollywood for his first movie, the one with Cary Grant. And he calls me Stink.
Stink.
Because he refers to... Because when I play, I emit the aroma of the black person who needs a shower.
When you
funk,
play...
Funk, they call it.
Right.
Funk.
Yeah.
So many people don't know what funk means. That's funky. But that's... direct from, say, the African-American dialogue or something. And he always says, I have to call him, it's his birthday. And He said, Toots, you're from Belgium, okay, but I think your ma spoke to a brother. You're not, he meant by that.
You get a route to Africa.
I have
there.
That.
A little tone
and
of Africa.
There's no explanation
music,
for that.
Your, yeah.
You know, you have it or you don't.
Yeah.
And so, I'm grateful that I have almost stamp of sympathy or approval from the black musicians.
Well, yeah. it runs through your music.
And as you said, there's a
debt there.
They call it soul, but whatever it is, I close my eyes and play and it comes out.
And here we are now. Almost 40 years after Bluesette came out, and you're still bringing out CDs. You've got your latest CD with Kenny Werner on piano.
Oh, can we play one track from
now? I want to play. It's a Chick Corea tune, Windows.
Yes,
I just love this.
Yes.
This is Toots Thielemans and Kenny Werner.
Yes.
Thielemans, jazz harmonica player, there with pianist Kenny Werner. This is a Chick Corea tune, Windows. Toots, you recorded this in Belgium.
Yes, we have a fan. and in within is publishing and printing, but within his factory he has a space that can be used as a studio. And he brought friends together. We played for a live audience, but they listened silently.
That's terrific. You've recorded with everybody: George Shearing, Ella Fitzgerald, Quincy Jones. We talked about Bill Evans, Natalie Cole, Pat Metheny, Paul Simon, Billy Joel. I mean, whether it's jazz or pop, you're buried in so much American music. And I don't mean buried in a disappearing way. I mean buried in a way that carries the music.
They call me. You know, I don't say, "Hey, Pat, can I play with you?" He called me. I played a little bit on his own record, of course. Bill Evans, the same thing. I had met Bill Evans in the early 50s when he came to listen to George Shearing in Chicago. And said, "Oh, we should play. And we wound up 25 years later that he invited me on this. For me, it's an important record. Affinity, it's called. It's a Bill Evans record.
Well, that's a great one. You know, you've been playing the harmonica for so long now, and I know you started your life out with respiratory problems. You've had asthma. How does a harmonica player have asthma and still make it work? How does that come together?
Well, these days there's a little better medicine, those puffs and those things, but when you have asthma, you know.
Sure.
And you have to play a long note. And the harmonica is inhaled or exhale.
That's right.
This. That's blow, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's E. And F is inhale.
There's the inhale.
So, say, if you have a classical piece of music where a long note is written.
It's required.
And it's, of course, you don't mess with Johann Sebastian, you
yes,
know?
Right. You play it the way it
we
is.
We play it with Kenny in the club, and in on the record we play. You hear the breath control? Mm-hmm. Now I have no asthma. Suppose that's Sicilienne by Johann Sebastian.
Right.
My good buddy.
Sure.
Asthma, right? D is inhale. You know, I'm exaggerating. But
with jazz, you can improvise, you can break it up.
You play Sophisticated Lady, right? All long notes. Without asthma. Now with asthma.
And there.
You can, well, there I'm it exaggerating.
Is. But, the,
know,
but the way the man made it work, even
and
with
that's
asthma.
Where I'm lucky. I play, I can improvise.
And be in the jazz world.
And I'm still have asthma.
you look at the harmonica and how it's just been, seems to have been around forever. Everybody loves it one way or another. It's so intimate because it is such a direct expression of
well,
human breath.
You play, you blow, and how many inches is that? 1 inch?
Yeah, that's it. Between the lips and the air coming out
box,
the other
yeah.
side.
So a piano player hits the note and the sound box of the acoustic comes for, or
it can
a saxophone,
be 5 feet away on a grand piano.
A saxophone mm-hmm. or a trumpet, it's always...
There's always distance.
And it's almost like kissing somebody you love, you know?
Yeah.
What can I play? I play a little bit. Can I?
Sure, please. We love it.
Etc. That's my funny ballad.
Move over Miles Davis and Oscar Peterson.
No, you brought
the harmonica right in there and you made it work. And you know, there's something about the intake on the harmonica. I mean, you can feel the drawing in of that breath, the human need, because you need the oxygen there.
Yes.
And it brings that need into the music, I've always felt. It's got that kind of sense of, I've got to have it, and it makes the music
I'm
have
I'm
the
more
feeling,
and
too.
More, let's say, I bought one. My first harmonica I bought when I was 18. And I'm 79. That's 62 years that I play that thing.
The same one?
No.
Okay, good.
And I have a guy.
You must have been through a lot.
I have a man in Minnesota who repairs them and tunes them. For those who think a harmonica is a toy, this one I'm showing you is a three-octave instrument in C, has my name on it, mellow tone, made by the Horner factory. Mm-hmm. And it's pitched the A. They can pitch it, tune it like a piano. It's state-of-the-art with the computer. This guy is Dick Gardner in Minneapolis.
I guess you know that harmonica pretty well. Pretty well. By this
well,
time.
It's three octaves, you know.
That's
and it can cry, you know.
Play us that Sesame Street tune that everybody knows.
If you are...
Okay.
Make some noise, clapping noise. You're good?
There we are.
Yeah, that was done... In they still use it, I understand.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever the first show of Sesame Street came, they called me, can you come and play the theme? Yeah. I made $37. Watch out. No, it was educational TV. Even Bill Cosby
too.
And the big names who went to talk to the Muppets or whatever.
Right.
They got union scale, whatever
right.
the union scale was, you know. But afterwards, they gave me a little extra bonus.
Yeah, I guess they did. Well, they deserve it. I mean, that is the sound of growing up for a generation and more of Americans
the
now.
The people who were 5 years old in 1960 are what now, 35? Yeah. They have kids.
Their kids are listening to it. Maybe their grandkids. We're going to go into another break here with Toots Thielemans. Let's listen to Ne me quitte pas.
Ne me quitte pas.
Quitte pas.
That's Jacques Brel. And that means do not leave me. That's French. Mm. And the poetry of this is, we went to the same schools in Brussels, but I never met him when he was alive.
This is performed by Toots and Bert Vandenbrink.
Vandenbrink, yes, a blind pianist from Holland.
sometimes we feel the emotionality in this song. Is that it the French? It's Jacques Brel. Where does all that emotion come from?
I try to express the lyrics. You know, there's My Funny Valentine, for instance, is a beautiful song. You don't, if you start to play it fast, My Funny Valentine, it don't make any sense. Here, Ne me quitte pas. Ne me quitte pas. Do not leave me. Je veux être l'ombre de ta main.
Do not leave me.
No, I want to be the shadow of your hand. Do not leave me. The shadow of your dog. Do not leave me. Oh, this guy he wasn't fooling around.
No, he wasn't.
Jacques Brel, he became a world star in French speaking. Of course he didn't.
Well,
I don't think he ever came, or maybe once in New York.
But who can resist it if you know a little love and a little loss? It's got to speak to you. We're talking with Toots Thielemans, the harmonica man. And here, over Jacques Brel's Ne me quitte pas.
You pronounced it well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking in the studio tonight with Toots Thielemans. Here's Toots Thielemans and Kenny Werner on piano and synthesizer with Charlie Chaplin's Smile. And Kenny Werner with Charlie Chaplin's music and lyrics, Smile.
Smile, yes. I never met Mr. Chaplin, of course. But this, imagine the derby hat and the cane.
Toots Thielemans, you don't read music.
Oh, I know enough to. I read slowly.
But it's not what you made your career on. We feel your heart in it, right?
No, but I know every note I can play.
Yeah.
To what chord it belongs and all that, of course. But I never had the schooling of a violinist or a classical musician that can read immediately.
Right.
You know?
But I wanted to ask you is, here you are, you're almost 80, you've built a career on this little tiny instrument and the emotion and musicianship that you pour through it.
It's a combination. It's the man behind or in front of the instrument, you want to call. And I never had a big hit, but I did so many things, you know. Oh, listen to Kenny here.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
He did Sesame Street and Bluesette.
Yeah.
Never a big hit, but he...
Always
Sesame
there.
Street. Oh, that's the guy. You know?
Yeah.
So, man, in Belgium, I'm more visible on the media. I'm more seen. People know me in the street.
The king made you a baron. I see the ring right on your finger here.
Yes, yes.
Our baron, Toots Thielemans.
Baron, Toots Thielemans. Toots Thielemans.
Yeah, that's great.
And in Sweden, a nervous starlet had to introduce me. He said, "And nu," in Swedish, I speak Swedish. "Och nu ska vi ha belgiska munspel sensation, Toots Tulevan.
Armentis.
I couldn't play. You can't laugh and play the harmonica.
Not the harmonica.
You know, but see, it's so many things. But in Belgium, to say, or places where I'm known from TV and newspapers, and people know me, know my face better than the music. Mm-hmm. Here in America, it's the opposite.
Absolutely the other way
around. You just define me like that, that I'm part of the core of what's heard, the diet or whatever you call it.
The soundtrack of the last half of the century. And now, in your latest recording with Kenny Warner, you're really playing to something longer, slower. Is this a matter of how your heart is changing? Is it a matter of how your body is changing?
These are great questions, my dear friend. But I had the discovery of my tearing power.
You're tearing, as in
the
tears.
Making people cry. When they asked me to play Brel in Belgium, they want to celebrate the anniversary of his passing. And in Belgium, on TV, all the French guys will be there, the stars, Aznavour and all those. And I said, everybody will want to do Jacques Ne Me Quitte Pas. May I do it?
Please.
Please, I asked.
And of course, we heard you do it. And give us a little more.
See. Ne Me Quitte Pas. See, and I didn't say the words, but after that, the audience, they cried, the public in the street, tu m'as fait pleurer, you made me cry, you made me cry.
What about new music, Toots Thielemans?
There's no generation as an exclusive on emotion. To me, I listen to everything. I'm open, my goosebumps are always on the alert, you know. I know with whom I've played, but I want to, like with Kenny, is a new inspiration for me now already for a while. But I listened to everything. I heard some guy from Nashville playing the dobro with a modern jazz approach. You know, and I find that all exciting, and I want to bite into what's happening. You know?
You've been biting into that harmonica for a long time. Toots Thielemans is playing two sets in the Boston area this weekend at Scholars Jazz Club in Cambridge. You can get the details at scholarsjazz.com or at our website, onpointradio.org. Let's listen to one more cut from your new CD with Kenny Warner, Toots Thielemans and Kenny Warner. Of course, here's your old original inspiration, Louis Armstrong's piece,
yes.
What a Wonderful World.
Can I speak about Louis?
Sure, please.
A couple of months before Mr. Armstrong passed away, I did a commercial, right? 28-second commercial. Chrysler Plymouth! And then we shook hands a few times over the 50 years, since 51. So he still is my number one all-time guru.
Let's listen. Thielemans, Somewhere Between a Smile and a Tear. Thank you so much for being
here. You're very welcome. You asked good questions. You did your homework. You prepared. Sometimes, you know, you have a lot of those interviews and, you're the guy, you know, and that's about it.
I could sit here all night, but we don't get to, thank you so much for coming in.
And I'm grateful to be alive, to talk about all that stuff. And
keep playing it.
I played with many of my gurus, and the 11th passed away. Jaco Pastorius passed away. Charlie Parker passed away.
We're glad you're still with us.
I'm still here.
You're still here. Toots Thielemans, thank you. In a moment, I'll be joined by our On Point news analyst, Jack Beattie. But first, here are some sounds from this past week.
America will not forget the lives that were taken and the justice their death requires. September the 11th was not the beginning of global terror, but it was the beginning of the world's concerted response.
No decisions have been taken on how we deal with this threat, but that there is a threat from Saddam Hussein and the weapons of mass destruction that he has acquired is not in doubt at all.
Arthur Anderson is charged with a crime that attacks the justice system itself by impeding investigators and regulators from getting at the truth.
A show of force in Ayodhya. Nearly 10,000 police and other security forces are now deployed in this small town to keep peace, to prevent India from being swept up by Hindu-Muslim violence.
For months, the government of Zimbabwe has conducted a systematic campaign of violence and intimidation designed to achieve one outcome, power at all costs. No surprise that this outcome has now been achieved.
Anthony Zinni gets straight to work, the special U.S. envoy meeting the Israeli Prime Minister shortly after his arrival in the region. The conflict that Zinni is attempting to end...
We hadn't heard from him in a long time. And the idea of focusing on one person is really indicates to me people don't understand the scope of the mission.
A rich week from George Bush commenting on the war on terror, Tony Blair, the Arthur Anderson indictment, more Muslim-Hindu violence in India, British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw. There's a lot going on, Jack Beattie.
Yes, there is. At that Wednesday news conference you just quoted from, which was the first that President Bush had given since October, he said of bin Laden, and I quote, "His network has, his host government has been destroyed." That near slip, I think, is indicative. The war on terror has developed a sort of bait-and-switch rhythm. We attacked Afghanistan to capture bin Laden and destroy his network. We advertised bin Laden dead or alive. That was the goal. But then we delivered the liberation of Afghanistan instead while al-Qaeda's leaders slipped away. Now the president wants to change the subject again to the war on terror to take it to Iraq, another switch. Meanwhile, according to the Financial Times, there are more than 4,000 al-Qaeda leaders still at large in Europe, and among them are non-Arabs and even non-Muslims. Only two terrorists have been indicted here, the 20th hijacker and John Walker Lynn. You have to ask, is the administration fighting the right war or only the war it can fight? Maybe some brave Democrat will start.
Maybe that George Bush makes no apology. He says 9/11 was the beginning of the world's concerted response.
Yeah, but maybe some brave Democrat is going to start asking us to remind us that our enemy is al-Qaeda and whether we really have a strategy to defeat it or not.
There is $5 billion more in foreign aid money being proposed by President Bush this week, Jack?
Yes, significant. 14% increase. The president says we also work on prosperity and opportunity because they help to defeat terror. A line of thinking we have pushed on this show with Jeffrey Sachs, who hails this as a great sea change from the president. So the president making a significant increase. It still is less than what anyone had expected, but probably more than they had. It's significant. It won't take effect, however, for a few years. But it's at least to concede the logic that the war on terror has a larger frame than simply the terrorist is something, so the president deserves credit.
Another shoe dropping there. But not all victories for George Bush this week. His nominee for the federal appeals court, Charles Pickering, went down.
He did. You know, that is our post-September 11th perspective with Bush at 80% has made us forget that he lost the popular vote and that only the vote of Justice Thomas made him president. Of course, Thomas was appointed by his father. The Senate Democrats seem to be saying no mandate to appoint judges who basically disagree, according to the Wall Street Journal, with the thrust of court decisions over the last 60 years on environmental protection, women's rights, civil rights, privacy, and the like. The GOP has charged this charge that's hypocritical of the Democrats to be so partisan. Well, you know, 40 judges have been appointed in 9 months, according to Patrick Leahy, and that's more than the GOP cleared in any of Clinton's last 4 years. Some judges under Clinton waited 4 years. More than 50 were never even given a hearing. And three of Clinton's appointees for that circuit were not even given a hearing. So an ominous sort of line in the sand for any future Supreme Court nominee, I think.
What went around coming around again.
Indeed.
Jack, thanks for being with us tonight. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Before we sign off tonight, I want to say goodbye to a friend and hero to me and to thousands in the news business. Thomas Winship, legendary editor of the Boston Globe, died yesterday. He was 81. To a generation of journalists weaned on the Vietnam War and Watergate, Tom Winship was a brilliant teacher and, more than that, an inspiration to work with passion and to work with joy. He hired me, a kid, 20 years ago at the Globe. His blazing spark, his attaway tiger, set me and 1,000 others on fire for lifetimes of searching and of that joy. Somehow, his touch, his example, still work their magic every day. Godspeed, Tom Winship. Godspeed. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is W.